Hello, and welcome to Viewpoints, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete.
On today's show, we'll be talking about accessible smartphones, the differences between a smartphone and a regular cell phone, and some of the powerful capabilities of smartphones, and also, obviously, about their accessibility. But first, to our tip of the week. This week's tip is, do your homework before going to the store. In particular, you can go to Access World for product reviews. But for starters, you really need to decide whether you want a smartphone or a regular cell phone, or maybe even neither. So Pete, can you review what the difference is between a smartphone and a regular cell phone?
Well, there are lots of differences, and it depends on the phone you get exactly. So a regular cell phone can do basic functions like make a call, get text messages, keep track of your contacts, and a few other tasks like that, maybe give you the time.
I use it as an alarm clock when we're on the road.
Oh, there you go. See, I gave you the hint right there, huh? But anyway, so that's your basic phone, and you know, many people have that. But a lot of, particularly the younger people, want a smartphone, not just one of these dumb phones like, you know, older folks like us have. But the smartphones typically have a lot more applications from them. In fact, they're sort of like mini computers that you can hold in your hand. Many of them will run editing programs for doing documents, and you can actually type a document. You can access your mail. You can access the web, and you can download lots of applications that'll do other things like enable your phone to be used for GPS and giving you directions and tracking around town. And we'll hear some of those things later on in relation to using smartphones when you have a visual disability. So, you know, a smartphone will typically cost you a bunch more. You often have to buy a data plan with it because you'll often be connecting it to the net to get information like your mail or to be browsing the web or to download audio or video from the net, etc. So they typically will cost a bunch more. And so there's trade-offs. It depends on what function you need, what you want to do with your phone, and, you know, how much you want to spend per month, right?
Turning now to our low-tech item, we'll meet Mike Arrigo. Mike is a self-proclaimed gadget guy who really enjoys testing smartphones, as you will see. In fact, he's put several podcasts up on Blind Cool Tech at www.blindcooltech.com, all one word. If you want to hear his extended reviews, we encourage you to go there. This will be more of an overview.
But his podcast on Blind Cool Tech are very detailed on how to use various functions of both Android phones and iPhones. Also, as an aside, if you use Macintosh computers with the VoiceOver application, he has a lot of podcasts on there for using Mac computers.
Let's start by meeting Mike.
My name is Mike Arrigo. I work in computer tech support for a database management software that actually is used for managing churches, you know, their membership, their finances, things like that. It's a database software, and that's what I do primarily for my primary job. It also involves doing tech support for a couple of other products that we sell, some ebooks, and we just released not too long ago a web-based product. That's where a lot of things are going, so I also do tech support for that. So tech support and computers is my job. I like to play with things. I like to try new things, and you know, I am a gadget lover, and I am a techie. no doubt about that. I've been at this job for almost 11 years now, and even before that, I've been into computers really since I was a kid. I got my first computer when I started high school. It was an Epson, had a 640K of memory with a 20 megabyte, not gig. 20 megabyte hard drive and 360K floppy drive. And for the speech, I used Arctic Vision 2.1. If anybody remembers those DOS screen readers, and you had the monotone speech for the most part. You had either an external synthesizer or you had the card that went inside.
Mike's been blind since birth.
It's genetic. It's actually called Leber's congenital amaurosis. let's say a genetic thing. I've got a little bit of vision. I can't read print. I can tell you like if a page is blank or if it's got print on it, but I can't, I really can't read it. It just looks like a bunch of dots. I can see like objects in front of me and things like that, which helps, like, you know, in seeing the other side of the street, you know, the curb and things like that. Although the vision I do have actually works better when it's a bit darker. When I go out like in the sun, I can't see hardly anything. I went to a mainstream school throughout, you know, grade school and high school, and I did have a Braille training and mobility training in addition to that, but I never went to a blind school.
You are listening to Viewpoints.
This week's focus topic is smartphones. Before we start discussing different kinds of smartphones, let's review the various types.
With the GSM carriers, which really is worldwide, Global System for Mobile Communication is the standard. In the United States, AT&T and T-Mobile use it, and like I say, throughout the rest of the world, like in Europe and places like that, that's pretty much all they use. We're one of the only places that use CDMA, Code Division Multiple Access, which is what Verizon and Sprint use. What I like about GSM especially is your phone number and your account information is stored on a little thing. It's a little bit smaller than a SD card, you know, secure digital card. It's a little bit smaller than that, a little rectangular thing. And it's called a SIM card, a subscriber identity module. What you can do then is you can take that and put it into different phones, and then those phones will then have your number and your account. So if you want to switch to a different phone, you know, you could even have multiple phones. You can just take your SIM card out, put it in the other phone, and off you go. With Verizon and Sprint that use CDMA, you can't really do that because your account is tied to the serial number that's part of the phone. So if you want to switch, I think you can do it online. It basically requires, you know, carrier intervention. And the other thing is you can really only use phones that are approved by the carrier, Verizon or Sprint. Whereas with the GSM ones, you can get phones that, you know, are not sold by the carrier. You buy them what's called an unlocked phone, because if you get a phone from AT&T or T-Mobile, generally it will be what's called locked to that carrier, which means you can only use their SIM card. But you can buy phones that are what's called unlocked, and they will work with any SIM card. So you could, in theory, you know, have two accounts, one with AT&T, one with T-Mobile, pop in the SIM card of the carrier you want to use, and it assumes that phone number.
So there are a bunch of other things that you might think about when buying a phone. What kind of phone do you want? What kind of protocol should it support? And, you know, if you're going to use it around the world, you probably want a GSM phone. And as Mike says, these unlocked phones will enable you to easily switch phones, get new phones when you want to, and you don't have to be with a particular carrier.
Now, Mike mentioned the possibility of if you have two separate plans with their individual SIM cards, you can plug the different SIM cards into the same phone. What he's done is pretty much the converse of that. So he's got a whole slew of phones and one SIM card, and he can plug in the SIM card from his one plan and use it on any one of a number of phones.
I've actually got a drawer full of Symbian ones. I don't use them too much anymore because, I mean, they're good phones. They're good for what they do, but the apps that are available for them and stuff, I just find limiting. Not to mention, of course, Nokia is phasing out Symbian to go to Windows Phone 7, which has no accessibility in it whatsoever at this point. I got most of mine from eBay. It's very easy to get new unlocked phones on eBay, and the majority of the phones that I've got, you would not be able to go into any store here in the United States and just buy one, probably, because a lot of them are sold in Europe and places like that, you know, some of the Nokia ones. What I was able to do eventually, because they changed it where talks, you could license it. I still don't really like this very much either. You could license your talks to your SIM card. And then as long as you had the same SIM card, you could use it in whatever phone, you know, had that SIM card. So once that happened, I sort of did kind of, you know, get a collection of a couple of, you know, some different Symbian phones just to play with and things. I've got a couple of flip ones over here, some straight candy bar ones and a couple of sliders. Again, I don't use them much anymore. I've actually given a couple of them away because I don't use Symbian much anymore now that I'm into kind of the iPhone and Android. It was a good platform for its time, but with Nokia phasing it out and the limited number of apps, I mean, developers aren't developing for it anymore. You can still get them. I mean, Nokia still sells them, and they're even coming out with a couple of new ones, but I don't think I could recommend one for a blind person just because you're buying into basically technology that's on its way out, which it's kind of pointless. And there are two screen readers, you know, to be fair to talk. There's talks and there's a mobile speak, which mobile speak from a Code Factory is licensed to your phone number.
as Mike mentioned, you can get a lot of these phones unlocked from eBay to get any phone you want. But of course, the trade-off is that when you're getting a phone from the carrier, often if you sign up for like a two-year plan and they get you hooked for that, they'll give you a substantial discount on buying the phone. So there can be some economic trade-offs between getting an unlocked phone on eBay versus getting one directly from the carrier.
So as Mike said, he's been focusing most recently on the iPhones from Apple.
In the iPhone 3GS, which was their third generation iPhone, which came out in June of 2009, along with that, of course, came the third generation iPod Touches, which were in the same operating system as the iPhone. It just, no phone capability. But other than that, you know, they're pretty similar. Where they had a version of VoiceOver in those devices, just like on the Mac. And it was pretty amazing, really, because it was a first. That had never really been done before. And the way it works is, in a nutshell, I mean, there's other gestures and commands, but to keep this basic and simple, when you touch something on the screen, normally for sighted people, if you just touch something on the screen, it activates it. Because, of course, the sighted person can see it. Well, a blind person, of course, is not able to do that. So when you touch something on the screen, wherever you touch, it reads the item that's under your finger, and it moves what's called the voiceover cursor, you know, to that item. It's an imaginary, you know, cursor. You can think of it that way. Now, if you want to activate that item, you double tap anywhere on the screen, and that actually then activates the item. If you don't know where something is on the screen, you can just take a finger and swipe across the screen, either right or left, and that just moves to the next or previous item on the screen, wherever it happens to be. So you can do that, again, in the web browser. You know, you move item by item, or in any application. Again, it's kind of the same thing what I was saying earlier about the Mac. Once you learn the gestures for VoiceOver, they work anywhere. There's no like separate gestures that you have to learn for certain applications or any of that stuff. It's a good phone. I've gotten a lot of good applications for it. The GPS apps on that are a lot of fun. Although now I still have my iPhone and I have no intention on parting with it. Because I like it, but I find myself using Android now on a daily basis, and I've sort of started to build an Android collection. I've got four different Android phones over here. Some have keyboards. The Google Nexus One does not. It's just a touchscreen only. So I use that now on a daily basis. I use my iPhone still sometimes. I'll switch back to it mainly just for, you know, a little change, not because I have to. Certainly, I can do everything on Android that I do on the iPhone, and in some ways I can do it faster.
I must say, I got to play with a friend's iPhone for a little bit a while back ago, and it's kind of cool to be able to take your finger on the touch screen, and as you move it around the screen, the device speaks in a very clear voice exactly what's under your finger. So you can, you know, really get a sense for what's on the screen geometrically, where it is. You can scan through things rather quickly, and that's kind of a nice feeling.
And if you have a little bit more vision and you just need magnification, he was talking about gestures, and it is very easy with a very simple gesture to basically zoom in on whatever's on the screen. So if you just need a lot of magnification, you can get that very easily.
Well, and as Mike pointed out, he also has a cart full of Android phones that he talked about.
Though Android phones have a touch screen, for the most part, can tap something on the screen, although it'll end up activating, you know, something, and the screen reader will tell you what's been activated. But for the most part at this point, the way you interact with an Android phone is moving up, down, left, and right and selecting something. So again, that concept is similar to the Symbian, Windows Mobile, and some of the feature phones. They are working on touchscreen access, I believe, and that may be actually out in the next major release of Android. I'm not sure yet. Android is a bit different than the iPhone in the fact that when you get an iPhone, I mean, yeah, they got the iPhone 3GS at this point or the iPhone 4, but it's made by, you know, one manufacturer. So, you know, the iPhone is pretty much the same. It's got a touchscreen. You got the home button at the bottom that you press. That's all you have with the i devices because they're made by one company and that type of thing. Okay. Android is a bit more diverse because they're made by several manufacturers. So you've got phones that are sliders that have QWERTY full-fledged hardware keyboards. You've got phones that are different, you know, sizes that are more, you know, you have much more variety because they're not made by just one manufacturer. At this point, you're going to have the best experience with an Android phone if you get a phone that has a navigation control, which some phones that don't have a physical hardware keyboard on them have a what's called a navigation control. Either it's a trackball or it's a like a you know a D-pad, you know, on like a joystick thing that moves you around. Now there's a couple of different on-screen keyboards that you can use to type with those. Now if you get an Android phone that has a QWERTY keyboard on it, what those usually have then is arrow keys on them, you know, up, down, left, right, and then enter. So you'd use that for your navigation in those cases. Now some phones don't have any kind of physical navigation control, and at this point you're not going to have the best Android experience with those. Not yet. It's coming.
So as Mike points out, there's pros and cons to the different approaches that Apple and the Android phones have taken. The Apple is sort of from the ground up, the speech and access has been built into the operating system, so it's very robust. Also, it's a closed operating system in terms of Apple has to okay everything that goes onto their system. So it can be very user-friendly and less error-prone, less buggy. On the other hand, there are more options and more flexibility in the open architecture of the Android system. But this also means that although you have these many options, there are lots of other developers making applications. They may not all be entirely consistent with how Google envisions the operating system might be used. So you may run into some issues. So there are differences, and you know that's for the user to decide. You should play with these things, go to your local service provider of phones, try them out, listen to podcasts, get as much information as you can from the web, and then make a decision that fits your use.
To make use of most of the capabilities of a smartphone, you'll need some way to enter information. You can receive your email, but if you want to send a response, or if you want to search for something on the web and tell your smartphone what it is you're searching for, you need to have a way to enter that information. Many smartphones don't have any buttons on them, and here's Mike explaining how you would type on a touch screen.
The way it works on the iPhone and on the Google phones that have a touch screen without a physical keyboard, you slide your finger around on the screen, and then when you hear the letter you want, you lift your finger, and then it types it. The iPhone also has a mode, it's even slower, but you can just feel around, and when you find the key you want, you double tap on the screen and that inserts it. Either way, that is going to be slower than if you can type on a physical keyboard. For sighted people, it may not be as different, but for a blind person, because we have to, you know, listen to the letters and make sure we're on the right one, and you know, we have to slide around a little bit sometimes to find it, you're going to type slower on a touch screen probably. It is doable. I mean, Apple, with considering what it has, Apple's done a great job with making it accessible as far as it goes.
So that's the Apple. Androids come in many different configurations, as we've discussed, and typing on each one can be different.
The phone that has become my everyday phone, again, it's an unlocked one. It's the Motorola Droid 2. I've got the one called the Milestone 2, which is the GSM version. It has a very nice keyboard. I never thought I would ever see the day when I could type as fast as I could on this phone. I can type very fast. Each key probably is about the size of the tip of your finger because it's a slider phone. So the keyboard is actually a landscape keyboard, not portrait like you see a lot of the BlackBerries are. So there's more room really for the keys, and it makes a difference. Typing on this is very easy for me. No, I don't use my thumbs. I try to type the same way I would on a computer keyboard. I don't use always exactly the same finger just because the keyboard is, of course, smaller than a computer keyboard, but I try to keep it as close as I can. Because the keys, too, since it's a landscape keyboard, the keys are in the expected place, so you won't end up, you know, one key off and you have to correct it in most cases.
And if you don't want to type on your telephone, there's even a way to enter text without typing.
With some things, especially if you've got an Android phone with a hardware keyboard, it's faster, I think, than on the iPhone. Another thing with Android that you can do, which is very nice, is you can use speech recognition. Google has that, and you can dictate into any text field, so you don't even have to type in most cases.
A friend of ours demonstrated this to us in a crowded room just the other day. As a coincidence, we were really impressed. The only error the speech recognition system made was when it changed what he had said because his syntax didn't make sense.
Yeah, I was impressed. I didn't think it would catch anything in that noisy room. It was really noisy.
and it did really well. So which smartphone should you get if you're going to get a smartphone? You probably know by now that the iPhone is more accessible than an Android out of the box, but once you use the various add-ons and applications, well, the Android is quite accessible as well, and you actually do have a choice.
There's this misconception that Android is still not a viable option for blind people, and that's nonsense. That is not true at all. It does things differently than the iPhone, and it drives me nuts when people say that something is not usable or not viable just because either they don't know how to use it or it works differently than the way they think it should.
You know, I thought it was interesting to hear Mike summarize that way, because my perception, even after having listened to a bunch of podcasts and seen stuff on the net, was that, gee, if I did get a smartphone, it really ought to be an iPhone. But it's made me think twice about it.
Now for this week's high-tech item, some of the nifty applications you can get for your smartphone. Smartphones have lots of capability, so people have created lots of applications for them. The National Braille Press asked Peter Cantasani to identify the 25 apps most helpful to blind iPhone users. According to the National Braille Press, he did one better, finding 26 that do everything from identifying paper cash in your wallet to taking your blood pressure. You can buy the book from the National Braille Press at www.nbp.org, or the American Foundation for the Blind has a really great book review of Peter Cantasani's book, 26 Useful Apps for Blind iPhone Users, and you should go to www.afb.org and search for useful apps for blind iPhone users or something along those lines. We obviously don't have time to discuss 26 of them, but we'll discuss a few. For starters, there are some interesting available screen readers.
For example, like on the iPhone, there's only one screen reader, VoiceOver. It's built in. With Android, there are three screen readers. Two of them are free. One is TalkBack. That's the one developed by Google. And then there's one called Spiel, which was developed by another developer. And then if you decide to get the Code Factory Mobile Accessibility Suite, it has a screen reader that will do the same thing as the other two. And that's a paid application. But again, you get the easier applications and a very, very good web browser, a talking web browser, which is very nice with Android.
Mobile accessibility from Code Factory actually includes a lot more than just a screen reader.
Code Factory, which of course makes Mobile Speak, they make that for Symbian and they made it for Windows Mobile 6. They have developed a product called Mobile Accessibility for Android. What Code Factory did was developed separate, accessible phone application, text messaging, a contacts application. And that also includes a screen reader that works in the regular Android interface. So you've got the best of both worlds with that, really. If you want to use their really simple application to do things, you can. Or if you want to use the regular Android built-in applications for those things or something else, you can.
For more information about mobile accessibility from Code Factory, you can go to their website at www.codefactory.es/en. And they're in Spain, hence the ES extension, but to get the English page, you go to the EN. So www.codefactory.es/en, and you'll be able to get information on their other products as well.
And as Mike pointed out, there are lots and lots of applications on both iPhones and Android that are available from various places. I mean, there's well over 100,000 applications on each one. So you might want to check some out for accessibility and usefulness, and maybe he can summarize some of them for us.
Just recently, I've been playing with two or three different Messenger applications that use like MSN Messenger, and they're very accessible. Skype is available both for the Android and iOS. It works pretty good. I mean, these smartphones can do so much now. They do GPS, they're radio applications to get streaming radio. They're music players. They're really mini computers, really. And with the amount of applications, I think there's over like 200,000 applications in both the App Store on the iPhone and the Android market. I mean, it's amazing. They've got another application on the iPhone. It's called Omobi. There's an app on Android too called Google Goggles, which is actually made by Google. And what this is image recognition. And you take a picture of something and it will tell you what it is. And that comes in handy for like money identification. I was playing with Google Goggles the other day and I pulled out a couple of my CDs and took a picture of that with the camera and it was able to tell me what CD they were. The phones with what they have, it's interesting to be able to come up with new ways to utilize them. I mean, you know, the camera can be eyes in some ways. It can take, you know, pictures. The GPS can be used to, you know, to tell you where you're at and how to get someplace. I mean, these phones have so much in them that can be used in so many different ways. And for us, especially maybe in ways that maybe even the companies that develop the phones never even thought of.
Well, maybe it is time for us to switch to a smartphone pretty soon and throw out our desktop computers.
Yeah, I don't think so. But I was particularly intrigued by Google Goggles, and so I went to www.google.com/mobile/goggles, and they give demonstrations of it doing a number of tasks. And for example, they showed it reading a menu. Well, it even translates the menu. So the OCR gives you the original, but if you don't speak that language, you can just tell it what language you want it in, and they'll translate it into that. So before you go shopping for a smartphone, here's some final words of wisdom from Mike.
The reason I do this stuff too, I think, is I want people to know that there are choices out here, and you owe it to yourself to do a little bit of research and find what's going to work the best for you. You know, go to these stores, try an iPhone, try some of the Android phones out. I mean, don't just use something because somebody says, well, this is what you should get and this, you know, this works. It's like what works for one person may not work for another.
So if you want additional information about the accessibility of smartphones, you can go to Blind Cool Tech at www.blindcooltech.com and download some of Mike Arrigo's podcasts. And we are very grateful to Mike for speaking with us for this show. There's also a blog on Android accessibility written by Access Anna from San Joaquin, California at accessibleandroid.blogspot.com. There are many Google groups about Android phones, about the development for beginners, for experts, just discussion groups. Search for Android Google groups and you'll find that. There's a community-powered site for vision-impaired users of Apple-type iPhones at appleviz.com. That's appleviz.com. And for Android access at androidaccess.net. That's it for this week's show. Next week on Viewpoints, we'll be talking about music education, annotation, and performance, and talking with and about blind musicians. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to reachout@wxxi.org or call us at 585-258-0333, and we'll try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Viewpoints, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. This program was hosted by Nancy Goodman Torpey and Peter Torpey. We hope you'll join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can download a podcast of the show by going to our website at wxxi.org/reachout and clicking on the podcast's link. Thanks for listening to Viewpoints, and have a nice day.